Between the years 1347 and 1350, the Black Death killed between 30 and 50% of the entire population of Europe. Even to this day, it was one of the most fatal pandemics in history, and according to our best estimates, it took more than 100 years for the population to fully recover. However, one of the rare journal entries from that time spoke of an odd little change that came as a result of such widespread devastation. The mortality destroyed more than a third of the men, women, and children. Such a shortage of workers ensued that the humble turned up their noses at employment and could scarcely be persuaded to serve the eminent unless for triple wages. This was documented by a clergy member who also noted that for the first time in living memory, high-born members of society actually had to get their own hands dirty toiling in the fields if they wanted to eat. Before this, societies had grown to maintain themselves. The limiting resource was good arable land to feed the masses, and the nobility owned that land. After the plague wiped out so many lives, the limiting resource became labor to toil the fields, and that belonged to the people. Wages increased, working conditions improved, and society became more equitable, offering new opportunities for more people to do great things. Today, we are once again facing down another population collapse, only this time, it's one of our own making. Birth rates are falling, people are getting older, and some of the world's most powerful people are trying every trick in the book to turn this around. But why? The last population collapse arguably brought about the Renaissance. So if we can do the same thing without, well, you know, wiping out half of Europe, what are we so afraid of?
I think a lot of people think that there's too many people on the planet, but I think there's, in fact, too few. Possibly the single greatest risk to human civilization is the rapidly diminishing birth rate.
Times reports the White House is now assessing ways to convince American women to have more children, including a $5,000 baby bonus and federally funded menstrual cycle classes.
So let me say very simply, I want more babies in the United States of America.
Okay, so before we openly advocate for letting the human race slowly die out, we probably need a little more than just a piece of parchment from a priest who witnessed the impacts of the Black Plague. The good news is that for the vast majority of people, it's also supported by simple, practical economics. There have been a lot of very spirited arguments made in support of having as many children as possible, and encouraging that baby making with generous incentives. They all roughly fall into one of the following categories. We need young people to support an aging population, or else we'll end up like Japan. A larger population means more people to potentially think up the next great innovation that will improve humanity. And a larger population allows us greater economies of scale to do things that we just couldn't do with fewer people. If, and only if, we can address all of these arguments, we can start to consider the alternative that just throwing more people at the problem isn't the best economic solution. And if we get that far, then what are the real reasons why the big voices on this issue are so afraid of a population collapse? Alright, so the demographic problem is probably the best argument for encouraging more baby making. However, less than 30 years ago, we actually had the exact opposite concern.
What the doctors want, among other things, is a government population policy with a limit of 2 children per family, and to attain this, a large extension of free family planning services, more beds for national health abortions, and incentives for couples to stay childless.
It's a complete 180 from the messaging of today, but at the time it seemed reasonable. The global population had just hit 6 billion people, and it looked like we were on the dangerous end of an exponential function. More people make more babies, which grow into more people to make more babies. Before the 1800s, this simple feedback loop was kept in check by two things: an extremely high infant mortality rate and a limit on the production of life's essentials like food and water. The world was keeping as many people alive as it could with the technology of the time. But improvements in medical technology and industry removed these barriers, which is why today the human population is larger than it's ever been. In fact, about 7% of humans who have ever lived are alive at this very moment. So if this continued, we would once again hit the limit of what the world could sustain, and we would either have to start accepting fewer resources for ourselves, or have people go without. It's not a sacrifice humans have typically been good at making. Fortunately, however, this decision probably won't need to be made, because now it's becoming clear that as wealth increases, fertility has declined rapidly. more than undoing the gains from improved child mortality and longer life expectancies. Almost every single wealthy country in the world today is dependent on immigration to keep their populations stable, and some are already shrinking. This is apparently a big problem because eventually countries will have too many old people and not enough young people to look after them. On a macroeconomic level, this happens in two levels. The first level is where young people are not paying enough taxes to support old age support services like pensions or social security. Already, countries like Italy and France have had to push back the official retirement ages where citizens can access their benefits, which their people were not thrilled about. They had to push through these changes though, popular or not, because without them the whole system would collapse, with not enough young people paying into it and too many old people taking out of it. Now, if you're feeling smug because you have privately invested to fund your own retirement, you should know this will impact you too. Private investments into business, speculative assets, or real estate still depend on a pool of productive workers to pay dividends, rents, or capital gains. So while it might take a little longer, a purely self-funded retirement will be at risk in a demographic collapse as well. Now, this is a serious problem and will impact many retirees and young workers who will be hurt by the increased tax burden or need to work multiple jobs to make up for a dwindling workforce. This is even worse in countries without formal retirement systems that rely more on family members to look after elderly parents, because then this burden will be seen directly. An only child might have to look after their elderly parents and potentially even grandparents, making it much less likely that they'll want to add their own children to the mix of mouths to feed. But as bad as that may get, it's nothing on the second level of demographic crisis. This is when there are so many old people that there just aren't enough young people left to look after them all, while still providing society with the goods and services it needs to function. This is admittedly a pretty scary scenario. The only thing is, we aren't even using the workforce we have now. In America, the number of people of working age who are actively engaged in the labor force has been dropping for more than two decades. Today, only about 62% of people between the ages of 15 and 64 have a job at all, and of those, many are only employed part-time or work in the gig economy. Now, America's population is still growing thanks to immigration, but other advanced economies with aging populations tell the same story. Italy is now the oldest major economy in Europe, and its labor force participation is less than 50%. Youth unemployment in the country ranges seasonally between 16 and 20%, so if they're really running out of young workers, a good place to start would be using the ones they already have. Germany has a labor force participation rate similar to America's, and so does Japan, which is typically seen as the front runner for this demographic collapse. Japan's population is shrinking, and the people who are left are on average very old. Apart from micronations, it's the oldest country in the world, beating even those sun-dried Italians. Japan's economy has been characterized by its stagnation that persisted since the 1990s. The declining population is often cited as the foundation of this issue, and if you don't want to end up like Japan, then you better get to making some babies. But would that be so bad? Japan's economic growth has been stagnant, that much is clear. But you can't live in GDP numbers or eat productivity, and what is often ignored is that Japan gets a lot of things right that most other advanced economies get wrong. Their housing market is far more affordable for average workers because with a declining population and very little migration, there's no expectation that real estate is a scarce resource with growing demand. Inequality is also far lower than in most advanced economies, and despite their reputation for overworking, on average, they spend fewer hours at work than most other high-income countries. Now, the country has problems, and even though these working hours try to capture unreported overtime, the reputation for overworked salarymen still exists for a reason. But a lot of other factors, like its unique corporate culture and its resistance to sweeping technological changes, have contributed to this as well. Japan is just a unique place. So using it as the sole data point for what could go wrong with a declining population is problematic, when arguably, it's also improved a lot of things for regular people as well. Now, so far, this has all been ignoring the promises that AI and robots are going to take our jobs anyway. An analysis conducted by the International Monetary Fund found that 40% of global jobs were immediately at risk of being unfavorably impacted by automation technology and artificial intelligence tools. It's understandable that people don't want to have children when their own jobs are facing such an imminent threat, let alone the careers of their potential children. From an optimist perspective, AI also pairs well with a good population collapse as well. In certain roles, a single worker with a suite of modern AI tools can already do the work of multiple people without them, and this technology is still largely in its infancy. The management consultancy firm is already wheeling this out to their clients using a system that's been dubbed AI Super Agency, which is really just consultant speak for give one person some AI software and lay off the other three people in their department. With fewer people doing the work of many, we don't need as many people to maintain our industries. Now, I know what you might be thinking to yourself. What if instead of achieving the same output with fewer workers, we increased outputs with the same number of workers? Well, there are two problems with this idea. The first and simplest problem is that we live in a finite world. For lots of people to make lots of stuff, we need lots of resources, and we're already hitting the limits of what our planet can handle in certain areas. It's not a coincidence that many of the same people who claim a population collapse would be a catastrophe are also heavily invested in space colonization. Now, that does have the potential to increase our access to resources exponentially, but we're still a long way from space mining and real estate on Mars being a viable economic exercise, and in the meantime, we need to be realistic about the limits of our little blue marble. The second, slightly more technical problem with the assumption that we can make more with the same number of people instead of the same with fewer people is that businesses are going to control the vast majority of automation, and they're typically demand limited, not supply limited. There are very few companies in the world today that can't produce their goods fast enough to keep up with customer demand, and of those that do, most of them choose to limit production to maintain their brand image as an exclusive luxury, not because of any genuine technical limitations. To think about this on a smaller scale, if you ran a little coffee shop with 4 employees and some new automated coffee machine came along that could produce lattes 4 times faster, you could make a lot more coffees for your business, but you probably won't have 4 times as many customers. It's much easier to get rid of the 3 staff, make the same amount of coffee for the same regular customers, and pocket the extra 3 salaries as profit for yourself. If you're feeling really generous, you might pass along some of those savings to your customers. Now, there are other reasons beyond pure unadulterated economic optimization why more humans might be better for humanity. One of the best arguments in favor of a larger population is that the more people there are on Earth, the higher chance it is that one of them will be the next Einstein, Mozart, or Da Vinci. A 1 in a billion talent becomes much more likely when there are several billion people alive at any given time. There is merit to this idea, but it's a lot like trying to solve our problems by putting more monkeys in front of more typewriters. The old adage is that with enough monkeys randomly mashing keys on enough typewriters, one of them will eventually create a literary masterpiece. But there are probably better ways to achieve the same result. In the past, most of the great thinkers of the time were wealthy nobility who could afford an education. Even today, there are millions of people around the world that could have genius-level intellect but are never afforded a quality education to realize it. Giving more resources to fewer people has historically shown to be a better way to recognize and promote genius than just throwing more people at the problem and hoping for the best. So if it doesn't make economic sense to have more people, why else would business leaders be trying so hard to warn us of a population collapse? Well, maybe they have our best interests at heart. Or maybe it's that business leaders typically own a lot of capital, and that capital needs workers to operate and consumers to buy from. Even in your automated coffee shop that now only needs one worker, it's better for you if there are 3 unemployed workers, because then you can just make them all compete with each other to be the lowest bidder on wages and benefits. If there is one job for one person, then your negotiating power is much more limited. This is literally already happening. The super rich have become far wealthier in the last 5 years, not because they've created more value than ever before, but because they can potentially extract more than ever before. Go and watch this video next to find out how that happened. And unless you happen to own a business that stands to benefit from lower worker negotiating power, you should learn to stop worrying and love the population collapse. And make sure you're subscribed for more micro stories with macro impacts.